Welcome back, everybody, to the best of Talking Sports Books as we continue to look back and celebrate some of the best moments and stories from the first 50 editions of the show. Now, in this clip, we're going to be talking to the man who's affectionately known as the Voice of Anfield. His name, George Sefton, of course, who's been the matchday announcer for over 50 years at Anfield for Liverpool Football Club. And in this clip, taken from the show, George remembers how, first of all, he came to get the job. And some of the very early memories, including Kevin Keegan's debut, which was George's debut on the same day as well. And the affection in which he is held at the club, which was underlined by Kenny Dalglish's 65th birthday message. And if you want to listen to the full version of this podcast, you can. You can find it on any of the streaming providers, or you can go to the website at talkingsportsbooks.com. And George's book, by the way, My 50 Years with Liverpool FC, is available at all retail book outlets. And just before we start, a reminder that the new show is out now, Euro 88, the football purists Euros with Stephen Scragg. And coming up, we will be delving into Sky Sports boxing correspondent Andy Clark's new book. It is called simply The Knockout. And you can join in the debate, the book debate, that is, on sports books and literature on Facebook as well, if you would like. And so to the voice of Anfield, George Sefton. It all began for you at Anfield one day. You're listening to Jacko's replacement, that's Alan Jackson, making a bit of a hash of things, and you saying to your wife how bad it was, and she issuing the challenge, you couldn't do any better, and you went home and penned a letter.
The first thing to say is, it was a typewritten letter. That puts you back right in the era, obviously, of the typewriter, before we had these computer thingies we have now. Yeah, she looked at me deadpan and said, "It's all right for you down here, but you couldn't do any better." And I thought, well, do you know what? I think I can. Obviously, at the time, I didn't know Alan Jackson. I didn't know that he'd gone off on a sabbatical. I had no intention of treading on anybody's toes. But anyway, I wrote to Peter Robinson a very long letter, A4 side of paper, and basically it boiled down to the classic Yazoo-used phrase, "Dear sir, give us a job, I can do that." And apparently my letter landed on Peter's desk almost to the hour within them having decided to give this other fella the big E for the new season. So that was, one of my pet sayings. Somebody was looking after me.
I saw mentioned, by the way, that this person actually came onto the PA just as Tommy Smith was about to take a penalty to tell somebody, a fan, to go and move his car.
There was a few little stories like that. I mean, he struggled with foreign names. In fact, to be honest, he sometimes struggled with English names. And people forget that in those days, you could play records the wrong speed. And he did that more than once. Not every minute of every match, but he made a few bloomers. And that night, I say, that was, he made one. And I had this conversation with my wife, which is now well known all around Merseyside. And Peter, God bless him, he got me in to see if I had two heads. He obviously decided that I could write a decent letter. And he also wanted to know if I could keep my head in a crisis, a skill that just turned out well over the years, obviously. But he gave me a trial. And in theory, the trial is still going on 50 years later.
Your debut was the same day as Kevin Keegan made his debut, 14th of August 1971 against Nottingham Forest. Keegan scored in that game as well, didn't he? The first goal on the 12th minute. What do you remember of your day, your very first day?
Several things. Obviously, Kevin and somebody saying over my shoulder, that new kid's a bit of a tiger, isn't he? And that was what he was. He was a new kid. He was unknown. He'd come from Scunthorpe for £35,000, I think it was, which he'd probably just about buy a round of drinks in the players' bar now. But I remember the previous few days borrowing good old vinyl records off some friends and colleagues to make sure I had enough to keep me going for a couple of hours before the game. And I remember vividly getting to Anfield. In those days, I had to get up the fire escape at the side of the old main stand, which was then the new main stand, in 1971, through the roof of the stand and down this sort of submarine ladder onto the TV gantry. And I got onto that gantry and I looked around at Anfield with all these people. And I froze. I absolutely froze rock solid. And I took a deep breath and I said to myself, well, look, I don't know what I'm doing here at this moment, but I've got to get on with this because all my family, friends, workmates all knew what was going on and I couldn't let them all down. So I either had to get on with it or go home, pack a bag and go abroad for some time out of the way. But anyway, I took a deep breath and got in. And basically, I did it parrot fashion the first day. But I always say it's like your players say when they're getting ready for a big cup final, they're very nervous. But as soon as they kick off, everything is fine. And that's the way it was with me. Once I got the first record going.
Can you remember what the first record was?
It was Maggie May by Rod Stewart. Well, I wouldn't put my hand on a Bible and swear to that, but I think that was it. Yeah, there was a lot of sort of very, what I call twee stuff in the charts at the time. And I, apart from You Never Walk Alone, the music I played was background music. It was all, I was wallpaper. It was nothing like we have today when I'm trying to build up a bit of a reaction in the crowd to get the atmosphere pumped up. There was no intention of doing that in 1971. But I say off we went and got through.
One player, by the way, I noticed who was playing for Nottingham Forest on that day went on to play for Liverpool, Peter Cormack.
Yes. Oh, I remember Peter coming. He was a really classy player. He was ahead of his time. And one thing I remember about Peter Cormack was when he turned up to Liverpool, he was injured. And he didn't play, obviously, for a couple of weeks. Then he turned up to play in the reserve game at Anfield one Saturday afternoon. And the doorman refused to let him in. He didn't know who he was. This doorman, he was, his name was Frank McGivern, I think he was. He was one of these old commissioners we used to have in those days. You know, the guy.
With the medals and the uniform. That's
the one. You will have come across him, I'm sure you will. You've known as Grumpy Old Frank, but he refused to let Peter Cormack in. I was standing by the reception desk and I saw Peter come in and I heard what Frank said, where the hell do you think you're going? And I literally pushed him out of the door. And I said to Frank, what are you doing? I said, that's Peter Cormack, our new star midfielder. And he said, well, I'm not alone, am I? And that was Frank's favourite phrase. He had a history. He threw Sammy Lee out once. When Sammy Lee, God help me, even when he was playing in the reserves, he looked about 12. And Frank threw him out at a reserve match. And he was so-and-so kids. And I remember Roy Evans come charging down the corridor and said, Frank, that's my star player you've just thrown out. What are you doing? And I think his piece of resistance, he tried to stop Sir Stanley Rouse coming in the building one afternoon, who at the time was chairman of FIFA. Yeah. And luckily,
over the years, I was going to say, you've experienced firsthand some of the greatest and most successful teams and managers in history. Shankly, Paisley, Dalglish, Benitez, Julian Klopp. I mean, the list is endless. But it's Kenny Dalglish, isn't it, that you had most of a bond with?
Yeah, I think that's true to say. For all sorts of reasons, I still say that I've seen all the great players over the years. And I mean, I think the only guy of the great players I never actually saw play was in the flesh was Maradona. But everybody, we've had Johan Cruyff, Messi, at Anfield. I was old enough to see the 66 World Cup. So I saw all the great Brazilians and Eusebio. But I would not swap Kenny for any of them. And then when you get past Kenny the player, you come to Kenny the manager. Who won stuff for Liverpool. He was terrific while he was running the team. And then on top of all that, you get Kenny the bloke. He's such a nice fella. That's nice is very sort of wishy-washy word, but he's a lovely fella. I was telling somebody yesterday, I remember going out of Anfield one day. It must have been very early 2000s. I was, after the game, I was on my way to the car, and Kenny came past the other way and just looked, smiled, "Good night, George." And I stopped dead in my tracks, and I came home and said to my wife, "Kenny Dalglish just called me George." And she looked at me as if I was crackle. "What else would he call you?" But I said, I didn't even know the great man knew my name. But course
what
did
he say about you, though, on your birthday? Because was hugely complimentary about your position within Anfield and your legend.
That's right. Well, when I was 65, which sadly is 10 years ago now, I was out having a meal with the family to celebrate. And my mobile started making a lot of noise. It was going ping, 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 ping. And I thought, what's going on? And I tried not to look, because obviously I was trying to be polite and whatever, but I had a sneaky peek, and there was a string of messages saying, "Wasn't it lovely what Kenny Dalglish said about you on the TV?" And I thought, what's going on? And well, as soon as I got home, I came up here and watched his weekly interview on LSC TV, and the last question that Claire Rourke put to him that day was, "Before we go, have you got a message for George, who turns 65 today?" And Kenny said, "Yeah, he's part of the history and traditions of this club. And it'd be more relevant if he left than if I left." And I sat here, just stared at the screen. Then I ran it through again. I thought, I must have misheard all that. This is a joke. Is it April the 1st or whatever? And then I called my wife in and said, "Just watch this." And we both sat here staring at the screen. And I think I said to her, "Take me outside and shoot me now, because life does not get any better than Kenny Dalglish, the king, saying things like that about me." And that was, that was a huge landmark in my life. I mean, you've got no idea how good somebody like that makes you feel. It doesn't matter what's going on in the world. Somebody like that makes life worthwhile, and you can't buy an experience like that.